All right, so today we're taking a deep dive into offensive security. It's kind of like trying to see the digital battlefield from the other side,
Exactly.
you know, like learning martial arts.
Yep.
Not because you want to pick fights,
Right.
but to understand like how to defend yourself better.
Yeah.
And to guide us through this, we've got Krishna Kumar Mahadevan's article.
Right.
He's like a total cybersecurity pro, over 28 years of experience, master's degree in computer science, the whole shebang.
He's been there, done that. Actually, MKK just wrapped up his 98th consulting engagement, and
Wow.
he holds the very sought after CISSP certification. So we're going to unpack like his strategy, see what we can learn from how these ethical hackers think,
Yeah.
how they approach these things.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. So the big question for our listeners is, how can you use these tactics to protect your own systems, whatever those might be?
That's the core of it.
So first things first, how do we even define offensive security?
It's about, being proactive, anticipating attacks, actively looking for those vulnerabilities, those weak spots.
Okay.
Think about it like this. Imagine you're securing a fortress, right? So yeah, high walls and moats are great. That's your traditional defense. But
Yeah, makes sense.
what if you also sent like scouts out to probe for weaknesses,
Yeah.
see how the enemy might approach? That's the idea behind offensive
No,
security.
I get it.
You're not just waiting for something to happen. You're going out and looking for trouble before it finds you.
So it's not just about reacting to like the latest hack or breach.
No, not at
It's
all.
more about proactive planning.
Proactive planning is key. And it's valuable, this kind of mindset, even outside of cybersecurity. Like imagine you're launching a new product, okay? So instead of just focusing on the positives, you put together like a red team. And they poke holes in your plan. They try to find the weaknesses. So by anticipating those problems before they actually happen, you're going to have a much smoother launch. You're going to be much better prepared.
Right. It's like playing devil's advocate with yourself, but with security in mind. Okay, so why is this offensive security so crucial in the digital world? I mean, we've got firewalls, antivirus software. It seems like we're pretty well defended already.
Well, those are essential. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they're mostly reactive, right? They're great at catching those known threats, the things we already know about. But what about the stuff that's new, the stuff we don't know about yet?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Think of it like this. It's like having a strong lock on your front door,
Yeah.
but then you leave a window wide open and you totally forgot about it. That's
Oh.
what we're trying to avoid.
So that's where offensive security comes in, right? It's finding those open windows before somebody with bad intentions does.
Absolutely. It helps you find those vulnerabilities that could completely bypass your traditional security tools.
So how do these ethical hackers go about finding those weak points? What tools do they use? What's in their toolkit?
Well, MKK outlines three main strategies: vulnerability studies, penetration testing, and social engineering tests. So, starting with vulnerability studies, those are like regular checkups for your computer security. It's like going to the doctor, but for your digital systems. They use automated scans to look for known weaknesses in your software and systems.
Sort of like those software update reminders,
Yeah.
right? But on a much deeper level.
Exactly. They're looking for a much wider range of potential problems.
Yeah.
Then you've got penetration testing, and this is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
Ethical hackers actually try to break into a system.
Wow.
They simulate a real attack
Okay.
to find those weaknesses that automated scans might miss.
So they're basically like ethical burglars, right? They're getting permission to try and break in so they can help you improve your security system.
That's a great way to put it. And they're not just randomly trying things. There's a method to their madness.
Yeah.
Penetration tests can be white box, where the tester knows everything about the system, black box, where they know nothing, and gray box, which is somewhere in between.
Okay.
Each approach helps uncover different types of vulnerabilities.
Wow. It's fascinating how structured this is. But what about the human element? Because that's often where things go wrong, right?
Absolutely. And that's where social engineering tests come in. These target human behavior, how easily we can be tricked into, giving up sensitive information. Think about like phishing emails or someone calling you pretending to be tech support to try and get your password.
Yeah, those are the ones that always make me cringe a little. You hear about people falling for them all the time.
It just goes to show that strong security isn't just about technology, it's about people too. The human element is often the weakest link, and MKK really emphasizes that.
So what can we learn from those social engineering tests? What are the key takeaways?
It highlights the importance of security awareness training for everyone. Don't click on suspicious links. Always verify requests for sensitive information. And just be skeptical of unexpected communications.
Yeah.
Especially if they're trying to rush you into doing something.
It's like they say, trust but verify.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've got these ethical hackers trying to break in, but how do we know they won't go rogue?
Well, ethical hackers are professionals. They're bound by contracts. They have ethical guidelines to follow.
Right.
They're using their skills to help organizations, not harm them.
So it's like they say it takes a thief to catch a thief, but in this case, it's an ethical thief working for the good guys.
That's a great analogy. And they're also following established methodologies, so that ensures their work is thorough, it's controlled. MKK actually mentions a few. OSS, TMM, PTES, and OWAS.
Okay, those are some serious acronyms. What do they all mean?
All right, so OSTMM is like a giant security checklist. Mm-hmm. It covers everything from physical security to data networks. PTES, on the other hand, is a step-by-step guide for penetration testing. It ensures a structured approach.
Okay.
And then you have OWAS. They focus specifically on web application security.
Which is incredibly important these days.
Oh, absolutely. It's where so much of our activity happens now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a clear structure, a method to all this ethical hacking. But it's not a solo mission, right? I mean, these ethical hackers, they work as part of a team.
Often, yeah. You'll hear about red teams, the attackers, blue teams, the defenders, and even purple teams, where they all work together.
Okay.
To share knowledge and improve security as a whole.
So it's like a friendly competition, right? Constantly right. pushing each other to get better.
Exactly. And that's how they stay on top of the latest attack strategies.
Makes sense. Okay, so speaking of attack strategies, let's talk about something that's really stealthy and dangerous advanced persistent threats, or APTs.
All right, APTs. These are the ninjas of the cyber world.
Okay, they sound pretty intense. What makes them different from other types of attacks?
They're highly targeted, very long-term attacks. They're not after a quick smash and grab.
Okay.
They're often motivated by espionage or sabotage, and they're designed to go undetected for a long, long time.
So it's less about a smash and grab and more about a long con.
Exactly. They infiltrate systems slowly. They siphon off data. They can be incredibly difficult to detect.
So how do these APTs actually work? How do they manage to stay hidden for so long?
Well, it's a multi-stage process, but we can break it down. Imagine a burglar trying to steal something valuable from a heavily guarded mansion, right?
Okay.
First, they got to get in. Maybe they find an unlocked door, a weak window. Maybe they even trick someone into letting them in. APTs do the same thing in the digital world. They exploit vulnerabilities or use those phishing emails we talked about to trick employees.
Oh, right.
So it's a blend of technical skills and social engineering.
Makes sense.
They're not just hacking in, they're manipulating people too.
Okay, so that's like the initial network access phase of an APT attack. What happens next?
Once they're in, the next phase is establishing a foothold. They want to dig in and stay hidden. So they install backdoors, create these hidden tunnels, maybe even hijack legitimate accounts to blend in with the normal activity.
So it's like they're setting up a secret base within the network, becoming a ghost in the machine.
That's exactly it.
And how do we even find them? It sounds like finding a needle in a haystack.
It can be challenging. But there are ways. Remember those red flags we discussed earlier?
Like the unusual login activity.
Exactly. Weird software behavior, unexplained data transfers. Those can all be clues.
So being vigilant and monitoring our systems is crucial.
It's absolutely essential.
Okay. So let's say they've set up their base. Now what? What do they do next?
The next phase is spreading the attack. They begin exploring the network. They map its structure, they identify valuable assets, and they look for ways to gain even more control.
Okay, so they're basically moving up the ladder, getting more access, more control, more potential to do damage.
Exactly. And once they have a clear picture of their target, they move on to deploying the attack.
Okay.
This is where they execute their mission, whatever it might be. They might deploy malware, steal data, or disrupt critical systems.
So it's the moment of truth. Where all that planning and preparation pays off.
You could say that. It's where they finally put their plan into action.
Okay, and then after that comes data exfiltration, right? That's where they actually get their hands on the loot.
Exactly.
Sensitive information, financial data, intellectual property, whatever they were targeting.
They're making off with the goods.
And how do they do that without getting caught?
They'll use encrypted channels, hidden tunnels, even physical devices sometimes to smuggle the data out. it can be very hard to trace.
So it's like a digital escape route designed to make them disappear without a trace.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it.
But do they always just vanish after they've got what they want?
Not always. The last stage is maintaining undetected access. They might want to keep an eye on things, gather more intelligence, or even launch additional attacks later on.
So they could still be lurking in the system like a sleeper agent, waiting for the right moment to strike again.
It's possible.
Okay, that's unsettling. So understanding this whole APT life cycle, how does that actually help us defend against them? How do we use this knowledge to our advantage?
Well, knowing their tactics allows us to build better defenses. For example, knowing that they often gain initial access through phishing, we can focus on training employees to spot those scams.
So we're cutting them off at the pass, making it harder for them to even get started.
Exactly. Strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, regularly patching software, all those basic security practices become even more critical.
Okay, it's like building a house with reinforced doors, sturdy locks, motion sensor lights. You're making it much less appealing for any burglar to even try.
That's a great analogy. And if they do manage to get in, you want to make it as hard as possible for them to move around undetected. That's where intrusion detection systems and other monitoring tools come in.
So it's a combination of strong defenses and early detection, all informed by this understanding of how APTs operate.
Exactly. You need both.
Okay. But let's face it, these are sophisticated attackers, right? It sounds like you need specialized skills and knowledge to even begin to combat them.
That's where those ethical hacking certifications come in. The OSCP and CEH we mentioned earlier.
Okay.
They provide the training and knowledge needed to think like an attacker, to anticipate their moves.
So you're basically training the good guys to use the same tools and tactics as the bad guys, but for defensive purposes.
You could say that. It's like learning martial arts from a black belt. You're learning the art of combat, not to become an aggressor, but to become a better defender.
I like that analogy. It's about using those skills for good, not for evil. So let's talk about those tools in more detail. I'm really curious to learn what's in that ethical hacker's toolkit. We touched on a few earlier, but I know there's a whole universe of software out there, right?
There is. And each tool has a different purpose, just like a surgeon has different tools for different procedures. You wouldn't use a scalpel to perform heart surgery.
Okay, so let's break it down. For starters, what else is out there for network scanning and vulnerability assessment? We already talked about Nmap and Nessus.
Well, there's Zenmap. That's a more user-friendly version of Nmap. It's designed to make those network scans easier to understand.
Okay.
And then there's Angry IP Scanner, which can quickly find all the devices on a network. It's like a digital bloodhound sniffing them out.
Okay, I like that.
And for websites, there's Nikto. It looks for security issues on web servers, almost like a code inspector looking for flaws in a building.
So it's like having a whole team of digital detectives, each with their own specialty.
Exactly. You need different tools for different jobs. Mm-hmm. And then for exploiting vulnerabilities, there's Armitage. That's a visual tool that helps you manage Metasploit.
Okay.
Almost like a hacker's command center. You have Canvas. That's a commercial framework with a huge collection of exploits. And AirCracking for testing Wi-Fi security.
So it's like they've got a tool for every occasion.
Pretty much.
What about cracking passwords? We talked about John the Ripper and Hashcat. Are there other options?
There's Hydra and Medusa. Mm-hmm. Both are great for brute forcing passwords for different services. It's kind of like a battering ram, just relentlessly trying different combinations until it breaks through.
Right.
And specifically for web applications, there's Burp Intruder. That's part of the Burp suite we mentioned earlier. It automates password guessing.
So it's a bit like a combination lock. Just keep spinning the dials until you find the right combination.
That's a good way to think about it. And remember, ethical hackers aren't just using these tools randomly.
Of course not.
They're following strict ethical guidelines, legal guidelines. They have to.
That's reassuring to know. So it's not just about knowing how to use these tools. It's about using them responsibly.
Absolutely. Ethical hackers have a responsibility to use their skills for good, not for personal gain, not for malicious purposes. They need to get permission before they test any systems, keep that information confidential, and try to minimize any damage they might cause.
So there's a strong ethical code at play here. It's not just about hacking for the sake of hacking. It's about using those skills to make the digital world a safer place.
That's what it's all about.
Okay. So we've got all these different tools, but is there a particular operating system that ethical hackers tend to use most often?
You could say that Kali Linux is kind of the go-to platform. It's specifically designed for penetration testing and digital forensics. And it comes preloaded with a huge collection of security tools.
So if you're serious about getting into ethical hacking, that's a good place to start.
It's definitely a great resource.
But it's not just about the tools, right? It's also about the mindset, the way you approach these challenges.
Absolutely. Ethical hackers have to be curious, creative, persistent. They need to be able to think like an attacker, to anticipate their moves, and find vulnerabilities before they can be exploited.
So it's about thinking outside the box, challenging assumptions, always looking for new ways to improve security.
That's a great way to put it.
I'm realizing that this is a really complex field, and we've barely scratched the surface. But what would you say is the most important thing for our listeners to take away from all this? What's the key takeaway?
I'd say the most important lesson is that security is an ongoing process. It's not a destination, it's a journey. The threat landscape is constantly evolving, so we need to be constantly learning, adapting, and improving our security posture.
So it's not about achieving perfect security, but about constantly striving to be better, more prepared, more resilient.
Exactly. And that applies to individuals and organizations alike. We all have a role to play in this.
This has been an incredibly insightful look into the world of offensive security. I'm starting to see how valuable this perspective is, even for someone like me who's not a cybersecurity expert.
It's all about understanding the mindset of the attacker, right? Mm. And using that knowledge to strengthen our defenses.
Yeah, it's like learning to think like your opponent so you can anticipate their moves and stay one step ahead.
Exactly. And remember, the goal isn't to exploit weaknesses, but to expose them so they can be fixed before someone else takes advantage of them.
This has been an amazing conversation. I feel like I've learned so much already. But before we move on, I want to dive a bit deeper into that APT life cycle you mentioned earlier.
Absolutely. Understanding that life cycle is crucial for defending against those sophisticated attacks.
Okay, so let's do that.
All right. So think of the APT life cycle as a blueprint, like a roadmap of their attack strategy. And it's broken down into different stages. So by understanding each stage, we can get a much better grasp of how to disrupt their operations.
Okay, let's walk through those stages. So you mentioned network access as the first step. It sounds pretty self-explanatory. I mean, they have to get in somehow, right?
Right. It's the initial breach. Think of a burglar casing a house.
Yeah.
They might try an unlocked door, a weak window, maybe even trick someone into letting them in.
Okay.
APTs do the same thing in the digital world.
Mm-hmm.
They're exploiting vulnerabilities in systems, or they might use those phishing emails to try and trick employees.
So it's a combination of technical skills and social engineering. They're not just hacking in. They're manipulating people, too.
Absolutely. It's a multi-pronged approach.
Uh-huh.
And once they're in, the next phase is establishing a foothold. So they'll try to dig in and stay hidden. They install back doors, create these hidden tunnels, maybe even hijack legitimate accounts to blend in with the normal activity.
Mm.
They don't want to be detected.
So it's like they're setting up a secret base within the network. Becoming a ghost in the machine.
I like that analogy.
And how do we even find them at that point? It's like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
It can be challenging, but there are ways. Remember those red flags we discussed?
The unusual login activity, weird software behavior.
Exactly. Unexplained data transfers. All those things can be clues that something's not right.
So being vigilant and monitoring our systems is crucial.
Absolutely. You have to be proactive.
Okay. So they've set up their base. Now what? What do they do next?
Well, next comes spreading the attack. They'll begin exploring the network, mapping its structure. They'll identify valuable assets and look for ways to gain even more control.
So they're basically moving up the ladder, gaining more access, more control, more potential to do damage.
Exactly. And once they have a clear picture of their target, then they move on to deploying the attack.
Okay.
This is where they execute their mission, whatever that might be. They could deploy malware, steal data, disrupt critical systems. It all depends on their objective.
So it's the moment of truth where all that planning and preparation pays off.
Yeah, you could say that. It's where things get real.
Okay. And then comes data exfiltration, right? That's where they make off with the goods, the sensitive information, financial data, intellectual property, whatever they're after.
Exactly. They're getting their hands on the loot.
And how do they do that without getting caught?
They use encrypted channels, hidden tunnels, even physical devices sometimes. They smuggle the data out in a way that makes it very difficult to trace.
So it's like a digital escape route designed to make them disappear without a trace.
You got it.
But do they always vanish after they've got what they want? Or is there more to it?
Not always. Sometimes the last stage is maintaining undetected access. They might want to keep an eye on things, gather more intelligence, or even launch additional attacks later on.
So they could still be lurking in the system like a sleeper agent, just waiting for the right moment to strike again.
It's possible. You never really know.
Okay, that's kind of unsettling. So understanding this whole life cycle, how does that actually help us defend against these APTs? How do we use this knowledge to our advantage?
Well, knowing their tactics allows us to build better defenses. For example, knowing that they often gain initial access through phishing, we can focus on training employees to spot those phishing scams. We can make it harder for them to even get in the door.
Right, so cut them off at the pass.
Exactly. Things like strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, regularly patching software,
Yeah.
all those basic security practices become even more important when you're thinking about APTs.
Okay, so it's about layers of defense, right?
Exactly. It's like building a house with reinforced doors, sturdy locks, and motion sensor lights. You're making it much less appealing for a burglar to even try.
Makes sense. And if they do manage to get in, you want to make it as hard as possible for them to move around undetected.
Absolutely.
That's where those intrusion detection systems and other monitoring tools come in.
Exactly. You need that visibility. You need to know what's happening on your network.
Okay, so it's a combination of strong defenses and early detection, all informed by this understanding of how APTs operate.
That's a great way to put it.
But let's face it, these are sophisticated attackers. It sounds like you need specialized skills and knowledge to even begin to combat them.
And that's where those ethical hacking certifications come in.
Right, the OSCP and CEH we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Those certifications provide the training and knowledge needed to think like an attacker, to anticipate their moves, and to understand their tactics.
So you're basically training the good guys to use the same tools and tactics as the bad guys, but for defensive purposes.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay.
It's like learning martial arts from a black belt. You're learning the art of combat not to become an aggressor, but to become a better defender.
That's a great analogy. So it's about using those skills for good, not for evil.
Exactly.
So let's talk about those tools in more detail. I'm really curious to learn what's in that ethical hacker's toolkit. I know we touched on a few earlier, but there's a whole universe of software out there, right?
Oh, there is. Tons of tools, and they all serve different purposes. Just like a surgeon has different tools for different procedures, you wouldn't use a scalpel to perform heart surgery.
Right. So let's break it down. For starters, what else is out there for network scanning and vulnerability assessment? We already talked about Nmap and Nessus.
Well, there's Nmap. That's basically a more user-friendly version of Nmap. It's designed to make those network scans easier to understand.
Okay.
And then you've got Angry IP Scanner. That one can quickly find all the devices on a network. It's like a digital bloodhound sniffing them out.
I like that. So for websites, what do they use?
For websites, there's Nikto. It's specifically designed to find security issues on web servers, almost like a code inspector, looking for flaws in a building.
Gotcha. So it's like they've got this whole team of digital detectives, each with their own specialty.
Exactly. You need different tools for different jobs.
What about for exploiting vulnerabilities? Anything else besides what we already mentioned?
There's Armitage. That's a visual tool that helps you manage Metasploit, almost like a hacker's command center. And then you've got Canvas. That's a commercial framework with a massive collection of exploits. And then Aircracking. That's a popular one for testing the security of Wi-Fi networks.
So it's like they've got a tool for every occasion.
Pretty much.
And what about for cracking passwords? We talked about John the Ripper and Hashcat. Are there other options for that?
Oh yeah, there's Hydra and Medusa. Both are great for brute forcing passwords, for different services. It's kind of like a battering ram, just relentlessly trying different combinations until it breaks through.
Right.
And then specifically for web applications, there's Burp Intruder. That's part of the Burp suite we mentioned before. It automates password guessing.
So it's a bit like a combination lock. Just keep spinning those dials till you find the right combination.
That's a good analogy. And remember, ethical hackers aren't just using these tools randomly.
Right, of course not.
They're following strict ethical guidelines, legal guidelines. They have to.
Right. That's reassuring. So it's not just about knowing how to use these tools, it's about using them responsibly.
Exactly. Ethical hackers have a responsibility to use their skills for good. Not for personal gain, not for malicious purposes. They need to get permission before they test any systems. you know, keep that information confidential and try to minimize any damage they might cause.
So there's a strong ethical code at play here. It's not just about hacking for the sake of hacking. It's about using those skills to make the digital world a safer place.
That's the goal. That's what it's all about.
Okay. So we've got all these different tools, but is there like a particular operating system that ethical hackers tend to use most often?
You could say that Kali Linux is kind of the go-to platform. It's specifically designed for penetration testing and digital forensics. And it comes preloaded with a huge collection of security tools, including many of the ones we've talked about.
So if you're serious about getting into ethical hacking, that's a good place to start.
It's definitely a great resource.
But it's not just about the tools, right? It's also about the mindset, the way you approach these challenges.
Absolutely. Ethical hackers have to be curious, creative, persistent. They need to be able to think like an attacker, to anticipate their moves and find vulnerabilities before they can be exploited.
So it's about thinking outside the box, challenging assumptions, always looking for new ways to improve security.
That's a great way to put it.
You know, I'm realizing that this is a really complex field, and we've barely scratched the surface. But what would you say is the most important thing for our listeners to take away from all this? What's the key takeaway?
I'd say the most important lesson is that security is an ongoing process. It's not a destination. It's a journey. The threat landscape is constantly evolving, so we need to be constantly learning, adapting, and improving our security posture.
So it's not about achieving, like, perfect security. It's about constantly striving to be better, more prepared, more resilient.
Exactly. And that applies to individuals and organizations alike. We all have a role to play in this.
This has been an incredibly insightful look into the world of offensive security. I'm starting to see how valuable this perspective is, even for someone like me, who's not a cybersecurity expert.
It's all about understanding the mindset of the attacker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And using that knowledge to strengthen our defenses.
Yeah. It's like learning to think like your opponent so you can anticipate their moves and stay one step ahead.
Exactly. And remember, the goal isn't to exploit weaknesses, but to expose them so they can be fixed before someone else takes advantage of them.
This has been an amazing conversation. I feel like I've learned so much already. But before we move on, I want to like dive a bit deeper into that APT lifecycle you mentioned earlier.
Absolutely. Understanding that lifecycle is crucial for defending against those sophisticated attacks.
Okay, so let's do that.
All right. So think of the APT lifecycle as a blueprint, like a roadmap of their attack strategy. And it's broken down into different stages. So by understanding each stage, we can get a much better grasp of how to disrupt their operations.
Okay, let's walk through those stages then. You mentioned network access as the first step. It sounds pretty self-explanatory. I mean, they have to get in somehow, right?
Right. It's the initial breach. Like, think of a burglar casing a house.
Yeah.
They might try an unlocked door, a weak window, maybe even trick someone into letting them in.
Yeah.
APTs do the same thing in the digital world.
Right.
They're exploiting vulnerabilities in systems where they use those phishing emails we talked about to, you know, trick employees.
Okay.
So it's a blend of technical skills and social engineering.
Yeah.
They're not just hacking in, they're manipulating people too.
Makes sense.
And once they're in the next phase is establishing a foothold. So they try to like dig in, stay hidden. They install back doors. They create these hidden tunnels, maybe even hijack legitimate accounts to blend in with the normal activity.
So it's like they're setting up a secret base
right
within the network, becoming a ghost in the machine.
I like that analogy. They want to maintain access without triggering any alarms. They might even rewrite code to cover their tracks, making it even harder to detect them.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty scary. It sounds like finding them is like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
It can be.
Mm-hmm.
But there are ways to detect them. Remember those red flags we discussed?
Like the unusual login activity.
Exactly. Weird software behavior, unexplained data transfers, all those can be clues.
So being vigilant and monitoring our systems is crucial.
Absolutely essential.
Okay. So let's say they've set up their base. What do they do next?
The next phase is spreading the attack. They begin exploring the network, mapping its structure, identifying valuable assets, and looking for ways to gain even more control.
So they're basically moving up the ladder, gaining more access, more control, more potential to do damage.
Exactly. And once they have like a clear picture of their target, they move on to deploying the attack.
Okay.
This is where they actually execute their mission, whatever that might be, deploying malware, stealing data, or disrupting those critical systems.
So this is the moment of truth, where their planning and preparation pays off.
Yeah, you could say that. It's where things get real.
Okay, and then after that comes data exfiltration, right? That's where they actually get their hands on the loot, the sensitive information, financial data, intellectual property, whatever they were targeting.
Exactly. They're making off with the goods.
So how do they do that without getting caught? How do they get the data out?
Well, they'll use those encrypted channels, hidden tunnels, even physical devices sometimes to smuggle the data out, making it very difficult to trace.
So it's like a digital escape route designed to make them disappear without a trace.
You got it.
Okay. But do they always just vanish after they've got what they want, or is there more to it than that?
Not always. Sometimes the last stage is maintaining undetected access. They might want to keep an eye on things, gather more intelligence, or even launch additional attacks later on.
Oh, okay. So they could still be lurking in the system like a sleeper agent, waiting for the right moment to strike again.
It's possible. You never really know for sure.
That's kind of unsettling.
It is.
So, understanding this whole life cycle, how does that actually help us defend against these APTs? How do we use that knowledge to our advantage?
Well, knowing their tactics, it allows us to build better defenses. For example, knowing that they often gain initial access through phishing, we can focus on training employees to spot those phishing scams. Try to make it harder for them to even get in the door.
Right, so cut them off at the pass.
Exactly. Strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, regularly patching software, all those basic security practices. They become even more critical when you're thinking about APTs.
So it's about layers of defense, right?
Exactly. It's like building a house, with reinforced doors, sturdy locks, motion sensor lights. You're making it much less appealing for a burglar to even try.
Makes sense. And if they do manage to get in, you want to make it as hard as possible for them to move around undetected.
Absolutely.
That's where intrusion detection systems and other monitoring tools come in.
Exactly. You need that visibility. You need to know what's happening on your network.
So it's a combination of like strong defenses and early detection, all informed by, this understanding of how APTs operate.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay. But let's face it, these are sophisticated attackers, right? It sounds like you need specialized skills and knowledge to even begin to combat them.
And that's where those ethical hacking certifications come in.
Right, the OSCP and the CEH we talked about before.
Exactly. Those certifications, they provide the training and knowledge needed to think like an attacker, to anticipate their moves, and to understand their tactics.
So you're basically training the good guys to use the same tools and tactics as the bad guys, but for defensive purposes.
That's a good way to put it. It's like learning martial arts, from a black belt. You're
Yeah.
learning the art of combat not to become an aggressor, but to become a better defender.
That's a great analogy. So it's about using those skills for good, not for evil. Okay, so let's talk about those tools in more detail. I'm really curious to learn what's in that ethical hacker's toolkit. We touched on a few earlier, but I know there's a whole universe of software out there, right?
Oh, there is. Tons of tools. And they all serve different purposes, just like a surgeon has different tools for different procedures.
Yeah.
You wouldn't use a scalpel to perform heart surgery, right?
Right. So let's break it down. For starters, what else is out there for network scanning and vulnerability assessment? We already talked about Nmap and Nessus.
Well, there's Zenmap. That's basically a more user-friendly version of Nmap. It's designed to make those network scans easier to understand.
Okay.
And then you've got Angry IP Scanner. That one can quickly find all the devices on a network. It's like a digital bloodhound, sniffing them out.
Okay, yeah, I like that.
And for websites, there's Nikto. It's specifically designed to find security issues on web servers, almost like a code inspector, looking for flaws in a building.
Gotcha. So it's like having this whole team of digital detectives, each with their own specialty.
Exactly. You need different tools for different jobs.
Okay. What about for exploiting vulnerabilities? Anything else besides what we already mentioned?
There's Armitage. That's a visual tool that helps you manage Metasploit, almost like a hacker's command center. And then you've got Canvas. That's a commercial framework with a massive collection of exploits. And then Air Cracking. That's a popular one for testing the security of Wi-Fi networks.
So it's like they've got a tool for every occasion.
Pretty much.
And what about for cracking passwords? We talked about John the Ripper and Hashcat. Are there other options for that?
Oh yeah, there's Hydra and Medusa. Both are great for brute forcing passwords, for different services. It's kind of like a battering ram, just relentlessly trying different combinations until it breaks through.
Right.
And it is specifically for web applications. There's Burp Intruder. That's part of the Burp suite we mentioned before. It automates password guessing.
So it's a bit like a combination lock. Just keep spinning those dials until you find the right combination.
That's a good analogy. And remember, ethical hackers aren't just using these tools randomly.
Right, of course not.
They're following strict ethical guidelines. Legal guidelines. They have to.
Right, right. That's reassuring. So it's not just about knowing how to use these tools. It's about using them responsibly.
Exactly. Ethical hackers have a responsibility to use their skills for good. Not for personal gain, not for malicious purposes. They need to get permission before they test any systems, you know, keep that information confidential, and try to minimize any damage they might cause.
So there's a strong ethical code at play here. It's not just about hacking for the sake of hacking. It's about using those skills to make the digital world a safer place.
That's the goal. That's what it's all about.
This conversation has been eye-opening. I'm starting to get it. This whole idea of thinking like an attacker, but using that knowledge to protect ourselves.
That's the heart of it. Understanding the enemy to strengthen your defenses.
I like that. So before we wrap things up, I want to touch on something you said earlier about our digital footprint. What do you mean by that? And why should we be concerned about it?
Think about all the information that we share online every day.
Mm.
Social media posts, our browsing history, you know, our online purchases. A skilled attacker can piece together all this information to build a pretty detailed profile of you. You know, your habits, your interests, even your weaknesses.
So it's like a digital fingerprint. And we're leaving it everywhere we go online. Mm. And that fingerprint can be used against us.
Absolutely. Attackers can use that information to craft really targeted attacks. They can make their phishing emails or social engineering scams so much more convincing.
That's a scary thought. So how do we protect ourselves? I mean, do we have to go off the grid entirely?
It's not about disappearing from the digital world, but about being mindful of what we share. You know, review your privacy settings on social media. Be cautious about what information you post publicly, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Use strong passwords. Enable two-factor authentication wherever possible. It's all about making yourself a less appealing target.
So being a little more cautious, a little more aware of the potential consequences.
Exactly. Think before you click. Be skeptical of, you know, unexpected emails or messages, especially if they're asking for personal information or they're urging you to, like, take immediate action. Don't fall for those pressure tactics.
Okay, so it sounds like a healthy dose of skepticism is a good defense in this digital world.
It really is. And remember, all those tools and techniques that we've discussed today, they're just a starting point.
Right.
I mean, the field of cybersecurity, it's constantly evolving. There are new threats and vulnerabilities emerging all the time.
So it's a continuous learning process. We can't just, like, learn it once and then forget about it.
Absolutely. The best way to stay ahead of the curve is to, you know, be curious, keep learning.
Yeah.
And keep challenging your assumptions about security.
Yeah, there's always more to learn, right? More to explore. Wow, this deep dive has been eye-opening. We've learned so much about the strategies that ethical hackers use, the importance of being proactive, thinking ahead, and the need to be constantly vigilant in the face of these evolving threats.
It's been a pleasure sharing these insights. And remember, the ultimate goal of offensive security isn't to break things, but to find and fix vulnerabilities, you know, before someone with malicious intent can exploit them.
So it's about using knowledge as a shield. A way to protect ourselves and others in this increasingly digital world.
Well said. I like that.
All right. To our listeners, we encourage you to keep exploring the fascinating world of cybersecurity. Stay curious, stay vigilant, and as always, happy hacking.